Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Welcome to the show. This is your host, Anne Nelson. Today we're going to be talking about where you're going to live when you retire. It is a question that we will all face sooner or later. This group of people, we're looking at the retirement living options available, and they decided that it wasn't very appealing to them. So they invented their own model. So six friends, three couples that were used to holidaying together, conceived the idea of creating a retirement community together. And they have created a living space for themselves in the country in one dwelling. And to talk about their achievement, I'd like to welcome to the show Eve Grzebaski, Daniel Weinstein, and Heather Bostler. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
To start off with, could you give my listeners a brief background on what led you down this path and the radical idea of forming your own community and retiring together with your friends?
Do you mean where we're living, the house that we're living in?
What you did before you retired, I suppose, and leading up to your retirement, just briefly.
Well, the situation is that we're three couples, and who you're talking to is a representative of each couple, and we were normal workers in Sydney, getting to older age, late 50s and 60s, and started thinking about what we needed to do in our retirement, knowing that we probably didn't want to live in Sydney. We wanted to live in a more gentle area lifestyle. And we'd had contact with each other through sharing holidays over the Christmas period, going away for a couple of weeks at a time to a holiday letting. And we enjoyed that so much that we started thinking about this radical idea, even for us at that time it was radical, of living together in the future, in the country, in a house that we'd built for that purpose. And that's kind of the transition we made from city living to country living. But it took several years and some very detailed planning to be able to take that leap.
I can imagine. Did you know anyone else that had done this?
No. Well, that's right. We have, I guess, in our heads, you know, we're of that generation, people that we knew that were, I guess, more like hippies, that, you know, would go away and live in communes. But we were much older than that age level. And that's why I said it seemed like a very radical idea to do it. But then as it developed, it seemed more and more sensible. And as we've lived that experience, it even feels normal.
Had you considered the retirement village model?
No, we never did.
You never did.
No, we actually, I don't know if any of us were really at the point of retiring when we were talking about this. We were thinking about it and thinking about it as something that was going to happen in the future. But actually, as it turns out, most of us still aren't really retired. We're all sort of semi-retired. What it was we knew that retirement costs a lot of money, but it costs an immense amount of money if you're living in a big city. And so we kind of all knew that we were going to have to leave the city with the amount of money we actually had saved in our working lives. And the idea of moving to the country was a little bit daunting as well, because when you move to the country, you don't know anybody. And I've met plenty of people who moved to the country and moved right back to the city in a couple of years because they felt so isolated. So it seemed like a sensible thing to do if we wanted to leave the city and go to a place that was less expensive, to do it with friends. And one way or another, we talked about it and kept talking and kept planning. And over a lot of years, he ended up doing exactly that.
And this is Heather. We took probably the better part of 10 years before we really started building our house. And 10 years is a long time to get used to an idea. So where it seemed quite radical to us at the beginning, as we just talked it through and got to know each other better and kept reviewing what would work for each of us and what wouldn't, as all those conversations happened over and over again, it became just something that we saw that we could do, that we could accomplish. We took it in steps. We bought a piece of property first and just tried that out, kind of camped on it for a while. We rented together in the city in a big house in Longueville and made sure that we could manage each other's company and that the whole design wasn't badly flawed. And then we got a designer and worked on designing the house that we wanted to live in. So all up, that process probably took about 10 years. And we've moved in and it's been about seven years since then. So it's had a good road test for 7 years now.
Well, that's really good to know. So what came first, the location or your design?
I think a location was a pretty early step. We had to settle on where we wanted to live, and all of Australia was available. We knew that we liked the beach, and we'd been holidaying on the South Coast, and thought, oh, that's a little bit too cold down there, too windy. Let's go north. And the maximum distance was going to be about 4 hours from Sydney, because we still had friends and our support network and family there. And it turned out that there was a friend of ours who lived where we finally bought property on Mitchell's Island. And we settled on a 4-acre block and bought it in 2004. And that's now where the house has been built. But that early stage had us deciding between different places, you know, were we going to live in a block that was 200 acres or a city block? And what we came down to was that this was a manageable size. It meant that we had space all around us and views. Yeah, so we just bought it, knowing that we could always on-sell it if we didn't like the experience of living here. And we used it as a holiday house for about 5 years before we actually built our dream house on the land.
Okay, so it sounds all very sensible and logical. What was your design criteria and how did that work out for you?
Well, the design evolved. When we were first talking about it, we had in mind what a lot of people think about when they're contemplating this sort of thing is separate dwellings with shared, say, kitchen or a shared living area. What we found was that, first of all, there's council regulations that can make that difficult in a lot of areas. What we also thought about was we wanted a back door. What if this didn't work after a couple of years and we wanted out? We really wanted to come up with a design which meant it was saleable. And if you come up with separate little dwellings, you might be able to sell it to a bed and breakfast, but there's a very small market for that. And so basically we would have done our money. So what we ended up doing is we found a local house designer, not an architect, but a man named John Basden, who was absolutely fantastic. And we said, this is what we want. We all want to have our own space. and we want to have shared space. We want to have enough privacy. We want it to be basically one building. Because of the council regulations, we had a out with that. We could have had separate buildings with a covered pathway and still call it one building, but we ended up with one large house with three wings and a big shared living area and a big shared kitchen. And it really came down to a logical decision. It needed to fit the property that we'd purchased, and it needed to make sense for our future. And I think we've done a very good job of it.
Sounds like it. Is it called anything in particular, the design? Is it? It must be more than just a large house.
We could call it Ralph, but I don't think anybody's ever given it a name.
Okay.
It's called a skillion roof design, and it's very solar, it's solar heated, it's solar sensitive. And as Daniel says, we haven't got round to naming it yet.
Okay. Well, did you have any obstacles dealing with the council and getting the necessary planning permissions for your dwelling?
Yeah, no, not at all. Our designer was known to him, and John is an extremely thorough plan designer. So we had they were very happy to receive his plans. We had no trouble with that. There were two or three minor things relating to the house and its position on the land, and we managed to overcome that easily. We were working with the Tari Council, and they were very good to work with. So, no, we didn't have any problems with any aspect of our design and development.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were all city folks, so you had no experience in living in the country before.
Yeah, more or less. Well, myself, I was born and raised on a farm, and so was Michael, one of the housemates here. So sometimes I look out the window and it feels like I'm coming back to my roots. But essentially, we didn't have any nice adult experience of managing a larger property. We're not very rural here. I mean, the location is quite rural, but we live a, we go for our cappuccinos and like that.
That was a criterion when we chose the area, was that it had to be within shooting distance of a decent cappuccino.
Right, okay. So was it important that you had your exit strategy set up before you started?
Yeah, that was critical to us. It's scary when you think about it. You're getting into this big thing, spending quite a lot of money, and what if it doesn't work out? What if somebody dies? What if somebody has a fight? What if somebody divorces? There's a thousand things that can happen. So we all sensed that it was completely critical. And it was a major step when we got our exit agreement in place. It freed us up really to proceed much more rapidly at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you see as the benefits of sharing your retirement space?
I think, Anne, the main thing that I've come to realize is that there are so many more benefits than I envisioned when we started down this path. And the main one for me is that a whole lifestyle has opened up, which is much more community-based. So there are many opportunities for retirees or semi-retired people to join clubs and to join volunteering groups and that sort of thing. And every time that that happens, I didn't realize it would work like this, but it's obvious, then the various members of our group have extended our reach into the community and share the result of those experiences with the other people. So that, I think, is the main benefit, is the enrichment of my life through the experiences that every other person in our group has had. And some of those experiences are shared. For instance, five of us belong to a community choir, the same community choir. Five of us do yoga very regularly, and we have a shed on the property. The shed explains the name of our group, which is the Shedders, because that was the first place where we got to come up and enjoy the property and stay for weekends and holidays. And most of us are volunteers in different areas of the community and the Manning Valley. Yeah, well, there are other benefits, and maybe, Daniel, you've got some?
Well, just one very simple one is the cost of living when you're sharing a place like this is dramatically lower than it would be if we were living in single dwellings. That was something we anticipated, but it's been very true. Because we shared the cost of building the house, there's no mortgage because we all were able to generate that much funds from the sale of whatever we had before. The electricity, water, everything that we normally spend money on tends to be a lot cheaper, including, I think, food, because of the way like we share meals in the evening and we sort of rotate who's cooking. We end up eating really well, and I think we end up eating very inexpensively. That really makes a big difference because it means we don't have money worries as we get older.
Do you have facilities there for visitors or guests to stay over?
Yes, well, we've set it up. We've created a place here where guests are very welcome. Other people are welcome. So our shed, which is really quite a spiffy little abode, has a couple of bedrooms in it. We've got space downstairs, so we've got lots of room for people to come.
Now that you've been living in your community for a few years, what did you say, seven? Have you had time to reflect? Is there anything you would change that you would do differently?
That's a good question, Anne. I don't think I've really thought about it. There are many things that come up as challenges for our group. And because we've been doing this journey, I guess, since 2003, in different representations, living together in a rental property and in our home here now, it seems like we have the resources, we're older, we have the experiences so that we can resolve issues as they come up. And I guess the big thing that we're going to be facing, we're not quite there, is what are we going to do when we do become very much older, when we become infirm or we develop medical conditions? And that's a topic that we haven't as yet broached in a profound way. We're just enjoying the day-to-day living together in each other's company. But I don't know if anybody else has an answer to that question.
For me, big picture, there's probably nothing I would change. It's just quite pleasing how it's gone.
Right. So the community that you've moved into or near, is it a community that already has an existing retired population that you were able to mix with?
Well, whether they're retired or not has been pretty irrelevant. I think the main thing is that we found community, we found like-minded people. I'd have to say that the majority of the people we found up here that we're hanging out with are people that are also escapees from cities one time or another. Not everybody. And they're all ages. Certainly, the choir that we belong to is a real central part of the community that we're in. And there's all sorts of ages, people working, people retired. And I'd say one of the things that's happened is that we're not specifically hanging out with people necessarily our age or people who aren't working. Depends on what time of day we do things. If we're doing things during the week and during working hours, most of the people will then be retired people. Otherwise, it could be just about anybody.
I see. Well, that's good to know. You've got a variety of activities there to engage in. Do you have any advice to others contemplating a similar retirement living strategy? I do actually know some people in Brisbane that have been holidaying together with their friends for quite some years, and this topic has come up and I said, oh, I know some people that have done this. So do you have any advice to others?
I have one bit of advice is that Heather has written a book about our experience. And a lot of the pitfalls are outlined in the book, and a lot of the things we had to go through to get it to happen are actually right there. And it's called Shedders, and it's on Amazon.
And there's so many different ways that people can retire together in community. And we chose a way that's commonly called co-householding or communal living. So we live quite closely together here because we share the kitchen space and living space. So I guess my advice for people would be to start there, to start looking very closely at what, you know, check out some of the different models of living together, communal living that there are, and just have really hearty discussions within the group about which kind seems to feel the best, would suit the short and long-term desires of people in the best way.
And I'd add to that, and that we started early. We started well in advance of doing, you know, taking concrete steps. So starting early is important. Picking the right group of people is very important. So it's not just a matter of, you know, putting an ad out for people to participate. It really helped that we were old friends. And communication is so important. And being brave enough to risk bringing up issues that, you know, aren't easily broached. I think those are my three bits of advice.
And just to add to that, I felt all the way along that the two key questions were always time and money. And that's, if you're going to do something like this, how do you organize yourself so that you want to do it at the same time, which is very difficult to organize because people have working lives, they end at different times. And that plays right into the question of money. Is like, you're talking about a significant amount of money. You need to be able to have it at the same time. You need to be able to trust one another with a commitment of a whole lot of money. So you kind of have to be open about things that mostly we don't talk to our friends about. And that's a big undertaking in and of itself. But once we got past that, things got a lot easier.
Right. So I can imagine you wouldn't want to be in a situation where someone changed their mind and wanted their money out at the last minute.
You wouldn't want to be in a situation where you got 9/10 of the way down the track and found out that one of the couples didn't actually have any money. Which, if you're not being straight with one another, that could easily happen.
Right. Okay. That's good to know. So is there any other tips, or another way to put it, I suppose, is what was your criteria for selection? I know in some retirement village criteria, people like to be near medical facilities or like to be near transport, I suppose. So what would you say would be the criteria for your selection of your location?
You're absolutely right, Anne, and I don't think that we've resolved that completely. The medical services are all right in the Manning Valley, but they're not as good as they would be in Sydney and other major regional centers. So we travel a bit. We travel up to Port Macquarie or down to Sydney to get various treatments and surgeries. But that's, I think, part and parcel of the trade-off. You know, we just live in beautiful surroundings, and then occasionally we have to travel for better medical facilities.
And one evening when we were all living in Sydney, we said, all right, let's buy a piece of property. And we agreed to do that. And from that moment to when we purchased the property was almost 18 months. And during that time, what happened was we ironed out those criteria. So at the beginning, we had criteria, but it didn't look like they were necessarily very well aligned. But when we just got out on the road, so we looked at 200 acres, we kind of thought, you know, how nice it would be to have a big chunk of property like that. We tried it on and said, not too much responsibility. So one by one, we started to narrow down and our criteria got tighter and tighter.
Mm. It sounds very sensible. Heather, I believe your book, Daniel said before, your book Shedders is out on Amazon. Would you like to tell me your website if people wanted to go and have a look up and how to contact you?
The website is shedders.wordpress.com. www.anniemcmahon.com.
Okay.
And the book is available. It gives directions to the Amazon site.
Yeah.
It's $3.99, so not exactly a pocketbook breaker.
Very affordable. For what you're putting out there, it's very affordable indeed. Well, thanks. It's been great. And I'm sure my listeners will get a great kick out of hearing your story. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Bye, Anne. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.